You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, what should a family do when OCD moves in? I am your host, Noah Larisee. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. And this week, we are once again fortunate to have our friend and distinguished colleague, Dr. Sarah Hyder, with us.
Hi, Noah.
Dr. Hyder is a licensed psychologist who specializes in the treatment of pediatric anxiety and OCD. So today we're going to talk about the role of the family when one member has OCD. And OCD really does become like another member of the family, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I love your metaphor when OCD moves in, because that's literally what happened.
And we often say, as we're working with families, if somebody was bullying your child, would you invite them into your home and allow them to continue bullying and picking on your child right in front of you? And of course, the answer is no. And yet that is often what happens with OCD, is that the family unknowingly invites the OCD into their home and allows the OCD to pick on and bully their child.
So OCD is clearly a very disruptive and, dare we say, annoying presence in the family. So what kind of effects does it have? How does it really show up?
The way that OCD works is that it doesn't just infiltrate into the child's life. It also infiltrates into the whole family system. And what ends up happening is that when the child becomes uncomfortable and is feeling distressed by the obsessions and needs to engage in compulsions to gain relief, family members become anxious themselves. Parents become uncertain whether this is something that they need to address, or they become anxious because the child is throwing temper tantrums, or they become anxious and worried because the child is crying all the time and is withdrawn or becomes angry and hostile. So what family members end up doing is they end up overly accommodating the child. They become overly consoling of the child. They engage in the repetitive rituals. They respond to the repetitive reassurances, the repetitive questionings. And the reason why they do that is in order to maintain peace, right? So family members are getting the relief, just as the child is gaining relief as well. And the unfortunate thing is, as we know, when you're getting that relief, you're actually reinforcing that whole cycle and increasing the strength of OCD.
It sounds like you're saying that the family starts to accommodate the OCD monster in ways that are not actually helpful to the child.
I would say not helpful, accommodate are very, very soft words for what we see. OCD generally takes over the whole family life, and it becomes that extreme where parents don't really have a life of their own anymore. Siblings don't have a life of their own anymore. The center of attention is OCD, and the child becomes OCD's puppet. And OCD gets to tell the child what to do, what not to do, what to watch out for, what is safe, what's not safe. And the child engages. Engages might be a soft word here too. The child demands that the family members follow those rules. And when family members don't participate, that's when you'll find the child responding in temper tantrums, withdrawal, anger, hostility, violence, and parents engage in order, again, to maintain that peace, however, at the expense of a functional family life.
And often what we see is that when the child does become violent or aggressive in order to get their OCD needs met, we see that afterward, there's often a lot of remorse and that they feel very guilty. And what the family will describe, they'll often say, it's as if my child were possessed, or as if they turned into a totally different child. So we can see that this actually feeds into a lot of dysfunction within the family, because because the child feels terribly, and yet they also feel as though they have no other recourse to get the family to do what needs to be done in order to bring the child relief through compulsion.
Can you give some specific examples of how parents accommodate a child's OCD?
Sure. So one thing we see is that parents, for children who have a washing compulsion, we'll see that parents buy soap for them. And we'll see that parents actually come in, they often almost tattletale on their child to us and say, I have to go to Costco and I go through bottles upon bottles of soap and I need to keep my car constantly stocked with sanitizer, when in fact it may feel as though you need to do those things. You're becoming complicit in the OCD and becoming part of the compulsion if you're doing that. We also see that parents will avoid talking about anything that may provoke anxiety. And kids will get to a point where certain words or even certain letters, so words that begin with the letter M or D, or as an example, are forbidden within the household. And so the parents will really work hard and encourage siblings to work hard not to say those words or not to discuss something like gymnastics practice, if that's anxiety provoking to the child. We see that the parents also put up with unusual demands. A big thing we see is that parents will give up their own lunch dates. They'll be late to work. They might miss days of work even in order to allow the child to avoid going to school or to avoid certain activities, and they'll stay home to care for or watch that child.
So in essence, what it is that parents become accomplices to OCD, and parents stop enforcing rules that would ordinarily be enforced. Parents stop disciplining their children that would usually not be tolerated. Parents start being okay with certain behaviors, even hostility and aggression, because, well, it's OCD. And the family start losing its structure, its boundaries. Parents no longer hold the authority to the household. Now you've got the OCD monster at the very top of the hierarchical structure, where the OCD monster rules the whole entire household and sets the tone of what has to happen, what has to occur. And parents end up having even less power than the child with OCD, because the parents are confused about what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate. And the other unfortunate reality is that when parents go to therapists who are not experienced in working with pediatric OCD or OCD at all, parents are actually told to accommodate children with OCD. They're told to do whatever the kid needs. If the kid doesn't want to go to school, well, he doesn't need to go to school. If the kid wants to avoid anxiety and be on screen time the whole day, allow him to be on screen time the whole day. If the kid doesn't want to engage in any activity, just let him be. And that is the worst advice that any therapist can give to a parent.
Parenting a kid with OCD at times is almost have to do the opposite of what you would do with a quote unquote normal kid, right?
Yes. We actually call the intervention, it's exposure response prevention. We're providing paradoxical strategies to these parents. They are counterintuitive. So a parent of a typical child would be able to give this child a reassurance, and the reassurance, a single reassurance, would be sufficient. If we drive over this bridge, will our car crash and fall off the bridge? And the parent can say, no, we'll be fine when we drive over the bridge. And that would be sufficient. For a child with OCD, that is not sufficient. So we actually encourage parents to say, and the child is aware of this, by the way, the child knows why the parent is responding this way when we're in treatment. We would encourage the parent to say, I don't know if our car will stay on the bridge or not. I know that no matter what happens, we'll be able to manage it. You'll be able to handle it.
In a sense, that is reality, right? The reality is we have no certainty. So anything that is outside of that we actually don't know. So what we teach parents is that rather than lying to your child because you actually don't have the answer, be honest and entertain uncertainty. Let them understand that, well, the possibility of it happening, there's always a possibility. The probability is very, very low. We teach parents the difference between possibility and probability. We teach children with OCD the difference between possibility and probability. And again, in the world, anything can be possible. Pigs might not be able to fly today. However, in 1,000 years, who knows? They might evolve to learn to fly. However, is it probable for pigs to fly today? It's very, very unlikely that pigs will fly. So in the example that Dr. Heider was giving, is it possible that the bridge might fall apart? It could be. We might have an earthquake and the bridge might fall apart and we might fall through the cracks. However, what is the probability? It's very, very low. And when we first teach parents to reassure to absurdity, because that's in the essence what we're doing. Let me just give this example. I remember a long time ago, I was working with a kid and a question came up about his health. And he would ask the same questions in 50 different ways, whether he has tumors. And of course, what normal parenting would do is, no, honey, you don't have a tumor. You're healthy. You're fine. And that's what we do with normal parenting, right? You can't do that with a kid with OCD. And you can't do that because OCD thrives on doubt and uncertainty. And therefore, even though you've reassured the kid will still have that doubt. Well, yes, you told me no, but there might be tumors in my body. You don't know that. So how can you tell? So that kid will constantly ask the same question because OCD is a disease of doubt. So when I taught this family and when I taught the mom to answer the question with absurdity, so instead of saying, maybe, maybe not, we usually expose to the extreme initially. And the response to that would be, yeah, you know, you probably got 100 different tumors in your body right now. The kid was shocked and the kid started complaining about it. And the kid said to me, but my mom is supposed to love me. She's not supposed to be responding to me in this way. And my response to the kid was, yes, your mom does love you. And part of that love means preparing you for the real world and preparing you to live an OCD-free life. And this is what that journey is about. It's about teaching you that uncertainty exists in the world. And the reality is, no matter how she answers you, she can answer you in 20 different ways, would you be satisfied with her answer? And this 9-year-old kid responded, no, he wouldn't be reassured. He wouldn't be satisfied with the answer. So therefore, we teach kids that parents have to respond with absurdity. So when working with family members, how we teach parents to engage with the child, we don't tell parents to just do it out of the blue. We have to prepare the child as well. This is a family system treatment, which means that the child with OCD has to be involved in the process, and the child has to know what is going to happen so that they are ready and prepared to take on this battle against OCD along with the family members.
We have to keep in mind with OCD and with the OCD monster, the lie of OCD and the OCD monster is not that you will have a bunch of tumors, or is not this car will crash through the bridge if there's an earthquake, or any of these obsessions. The lie is what's underneath. If this happens, you won't be strong enough to handle it. You won't be strong enough to manage it. So rather than giving a reassurance, you don't have these tumors, what we can say is, I don't know if you have tumors or not. I do know that if you do have these tumors, you will be able to endure. you will be able to handle this situation.
We've talked about giving reassurance. What about your example earlier of the hand washing and the parents that go to Costco to store that they're stored up on hand washing soap? How would they change or modify their behavior with a kid who washes?
Well, we see this a lot with the example of hand washing, where we see parents that may check locks or stoves or doors on behalf of the children as well. We want the child to set the pace for how they are going to break the OCD monster's rules. In essence, do the opposite of what the OCD monster tells you to do. We want the child in therapy and through the process of therapy to first identify what are all of the things that they do because the OCD monster tells them they have to do these things to feel okay, and what are all of the things that the family members do because the OCD monster says you have to do these things in order to be okay. And once we have that list, we as therapists might guide and suggest, oh, let's try and do this one differently. You know, let's work on hand washing and let's have your parents buy less soap. Or you will agree to only use the soap that your parents purchase on a weekly basis. They won't do a second run to the grocery store to buy more. We want the child to agree with that first. And we can start small. We can start with the smallest increment of change. And once the child sees that they can, in fact, do something just a little bit differently from what the OCD monster dictates, we often see then that treatment builds momentum and the child is able to do more and more. So we don't suggest that the parents on their own stop buying the soap. We suggest that they do it as this teamwork approach where the child knows that it's going to happen. Therefore, the child gets credit when they are successful.
There are times, though, when a child is not motivated for treatment, when a child does not want to improve, is fine living with OCD because, well, why not? You know, I've got everyone in my household accommodating me and doing what I need to, and why would I want to face my fears by doing exposures? And in those circumstances, then yes, we can only work with parents because the child refuses to participate. And when we do work with parents, we will instruct the parents on how to tell the child, well, I'm only buying one bottle of soap this week. So this week, this is all the soap that you're going to have. And if you use it all before the week's end, then you just won't have any more soap. We will teach parents how to start minimizing their accommodations so that at least they are not allowing that bully to stick around. And then there are other times when you have kids who are somewhat motivated, and then as the exposures become more and more challenging and more difficult, they will start negotiating with parents. So they will say, well, what if you just buy me two bottles of soap and let me try to use one, but if I can't, then you'll let me have the other bottle. And they'll start negotiating. The problem with parents who negotiate is pretty much the same as the rule of thumb with negotiating with anyone, right? So for example, terrorists. We don't negotiate with terrorists. And we don't negotiate with terrorists because that only teaches terrorists that they can continue terrorizing. And we will just give in. We will just give them what they want. And with OCD, it's pretty much the same. You wouldn't negotiate with terrorists, and OCD is a terrorist in your home. So you wouldn't negotiate with that as well.
I would imagine that parents, they bring their kid in for treatment, and then they learn that the parents, that they have to change. What are some sort of unique challenges that come up with parents when they hear this news?
I would say that all the time, parents come in, and they're the ones who also has to change. Because it, again, OCD infiltrates the entire family system, and it doesn't just affect the child. And parents get into the habit of accommodating the child to the point where there are no rules anymore. There are no boundaries anymore. Anything goes in the family. And what parents have to do is unlearn that and relearn that rules apply, expectations apply, standards apply. Just because we've got OCD terrorists living in our house doesn't mean you can now do whatever you want. You don't have to be hostage to the OCD terrorists. What you can do is continue to set those rules, expectations. You continue to enforce the discipline. Of course, if you have gone to the opposite of extreme of allowing your child with OCD to do anything, you can't just now go to the other extreme of enforcing every single expectation and rule. It has to be done in a stepwise manner. And what we teach parents here at the Renewed Freedom Center is how to do that. It's how to start slow and how to shape the child's behavior so that you're getting the child to be more compliant, more motivated, more committed, rather than more aggressive and rebellious.
A unique challenge, Noah, is that we need to help parents to feel comfortable allowing their child to be very, very uncomfortable. And it's a unique challenge as a therapist as well. I think most of us get into this profession because we want people, in theory, we want to help people feel better and feel good. And yet so much of my work on a daily basis entails actually deliberately putting somebody in a place where they're going to feel awful for a period of time, of course, with the end goal that as they conquer their fears, they will have this renewed freedom and feel better. We need to teach parents to do that. And that's very, very difficult. As a parent, again, it's counterintuitive to not provide your child who's suffering in front of you because they have to face their fear, to not spare them from that pain. And I do think it's very difficult for family members, and they really have to trust this process and understand and have a lot of education before we start the exposures that we're doing this to provide relief down the road.
Just to add to that, at the end of the day, what you're implying to the child by allowing your child to experience the discomfort is you have what it takes. You can make it through. I don't need to be here to protect you. I don't need to be here to comfort you. That by going through this process, you will become stronger at the end of the day. And that's true. No matter whether you're going through exposures for fears and OCD, or your child is going through gymnastics training. Do you know how arduous gymnastic training is? Your child is going to be experiencing discomfort and is going to be suffering, and their bodies are going to be hurt. However, you let your child go through that process because they will come out stronger at the end of that process. So with treatment, it's the same. We teach parents to allow their child to go through the discomfort on their own, because by doing so, you're implying to the child, you've got it.
And beyond treatment, what are some ways in which parents can advocate for their child with OCD, either at school or in other places?
The easy answer is parents may want to consider a 504 plan for their child, which is different from an IEP or individualized education plan. A 504 plan simply means if the OCD is interfering with their child's ability to learn, they can build accommodations into their child's schooling through any public school or private school. So that's something that parents may want to consider. And they also need to be aware and educate themselves about OCD so that they feel comfortable talking to other parents, teachers, coaches, so that other people in the child's life understand what it is.
At the end of the day, the treatment for OCD is a systemic treatment, and thus collaboration needs to occur in all areas of the child's life, between family members, between the school and the therapist and the parents, between the pediatrician, between extracurricular activities, between nannies and family members. So it's really important for parents to be the point person to coordinate everyone's collaboration so that everything can progress and improve smoothly.
Great. Thank you both so much, and especially thank Dr. Heider for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.